This is the Marketing Hero Podcast by ClearPivot, turning marketers into heroes.
Welcome to the Marketing Hero Podcast. I'm your host, Maya Wells. Today, we're talking all things go-to-market with the absolutely unstoppable TK Cater. TK is an entrepreneur, international best-selling author, and angel investor, and he knows a whole lot about the GTM process for SaaS. So if you've been curious about how to take your idea to market successfully, keep on listening. We're going to dive right in. TK Cater, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Maya. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start off with a question that we like to ask all of our guests. What is your favorite part of your professional life, and how did you figure that out?
Well, I spent the last 15 years building, scaling, exiting SaaS businesses. So my last company was a company called TeltApp. We made sales engagement software. We pioneered that category. We were backed by Andreessen Horowitz. We then sold it to Marketo. I joined their executive team. And then we did a two-year transformation in Marketo and sold it to Adobe for $4.75 billion. And that was about a 10-year journey. And after that, I was like, okay, what do I want to do next? And so now I spend my time focusing on two things. One, I run a YouTube channel on helping SaaS founders grow their SaaS businesses. And I also run a coaching program where I work with SaaS founders to flesh out their go-to-market strategy so that they can eventually go in to work with agencies like you guys where they can run the execution. SaaS businesses and Lagavulin and Scotch. Those are my two favorite things. And I get to do both when I'm coaching founders.
Fantastic. I really love the four sets of questions that you point out on your blog and on your YouTube channel about GTM. Can we talk more about those ones? Like the first one is, what is your target market and what's the underserved part of that market? And who are the top competitors? Things like that. Is that one of the most important things SaaS founders need to think about first?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the founders that I work with, and this is true for even when I was building my company, when we're in the early stages, we're essentially doing this Shawshank crawl to product market fit. And, you know, a lot of times we're founders that are technical founders and we have this technology and we're really trying to make sure that there's a real market for it. And it can be really easy to fall into a trap where you're falling into this one more feature trap. And you keep building. And this is why embracing sales and marketing is important. And I think when you're doing that, it's important to understand, like, are you going after a market and are you going after a problem that is urgent and important? A lot of founders skip that. And it turns out that market is more important than a lot of other things, including how great your product is or how great your team is. If the market forces aren't there, then none of it will matter.
Do you find that you see a lot of founders getting in that trap where they've done a lot of work towards the product, for example, or they've got a great team together, and then they're surprised when they work with you to hear that they need to do a heck of a lot more work on market first?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I talk a lot about in my YouTube channel and also with the founders that I work with directly is there's a difference between go-to-market execution and go-to-market strategy. And there are lots of agencies and marketers, even you guys, that do a lot around execution, but it's the strategy that often gets forgotten. And that's owned by the CEO. No one else can do that. No marketer that you can hire can figure out the strategy. And so that's what I work with CEOs on and figure out, like, hey, what's the right market for this? Is it an urgent, important problem? What's the ideal customer profile? Those are things that are more strategic things that then drive the execution on how many ads do we run or what should our emails say? And those two get conflated. And I think founders that understand the difference between those two and prioritize strategy first, and then the execution, tend to win in the market.
What's the best way for these founders to go about exploring the market and competitors and things like that?
What we like to see, especially when I'm working with founders, is do they have domain knowledge? And I think every founder should ask themselves, like, do you have domain knowledge in the market you're going after? If you don't have domain knowledge, then chances are you're not going to win, especially in B2B SaaS, which is what I specialize in. The most successful founders have had worked in a company and experienced the problem or have been in a certain very specific vertical and have seen the problem over and over. That's what you want. And so that's usually the first thing to look at. Like, do you have domain knowledge? If you don't have domain knowledge, then maybe this is not the right market for you to go after. It's kind of like, you know, being the one, like I remember when I was first starting TeltApp, I was part of an accelerator program, and there were these two guys that were going to revolutionize the wedding industry. And that was their pitch. And I'm like, well, are you guys married? They were not married. I'm like, have you ever worked in the wedding industry? They never worked in the wedding industry. Needless to say, that company didn't go anywhere. So I think domain knowledge is super important. Once you have that domain knowledge, then it's about, well, who do you know that's in that domain that you've already worked with? And how do you validate it with them? And how do you get them to buy quickly? Can you pre-sell to them? Like, those are things that are very unscalable in the early stages. But if you do it, it can actually help you validate the market very quickly.
And so are you saying that you would like to see founders validating the market through something like a smoke test, for example, before they ever build anything?
Yeah, 100%. Like, a lot of people think of go-to-market, especially go-to-market strategy, as like, oh, I'm going to go build, and then we're going to go sell the product. I think you need to do that at day zero. Day zero, as you're writing the first line of code, you're also testing the market and getting your messaging and thinking about the strategy. Like, those are super important.
So for you, it can be a concurrent process?
Yeah, it should 100% be a concurrent process. Yeah.
Okay. That does make sense. I see a lot of that where people will say, here's our product. Now, how do we market it? And if there's not a product market fit, it's really hard to do that. Definitely see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you help founders think about the problems that they're solving? One of the questions that you have on your YouTube channel for this is, what's the important, urgent, and frequent problem that you're solving, and why does this problem exist? So I think what you're saying is the domain knowledge will help you out a little bit with that. How do they dive deeper into that second question of your four?
Yeah. One of the things that I always look for when I'm evaluating founders on whether I work with them or not is, does their product line up with the compensation plan of who they're selling to? So if I'm selling to a VP of sales, a VP of sales gets compensated on closing deals, they get compensated on generating pipeline, and they get compensated on ramping salespeople. Those are the three things they get compensated on. And if you're building a sales software that is not aligned with those three compensation plan factors, then chances are you're going to fail. And so that's one of the mental tricks that I always use and I teach founders on. That's how you figure out it's an urgent and important problem. It's an urgent problem if you're comped on it. Simple.
Is there an example that you can think of where that problem wasn't as urgent as they may have thought and you helped them to pivot the product idea?
Yeah. One of the things that I often come across is productivity problems. You know, if you're in the space of productivity, we're like, we'll help you do X faster. That's usually a trap, right? One of the members of my coaching program, what we do in the coaching program is we help them get the strategy right. So one of the members came in, they've already built the product, they have some revenues. Interestingly enough, they had gone to an agency partner of ours, and the agency partner was like, hey, you're too early. Like, you shouldn't spend money on all this. Like, you should go figure out the strategy. And they referred them to us. And we kind of put them through prep school and then give them back to the agency partners that way. And for them, they had this incredible technology and they were like, hey, we help accounting firms operate faster. And it's like, well, no one really cares about operating faster. And so we were able to pivot their messaging more around, we help accounting firms scale revenues without hiring more people, which is kind of the same thing, except you're not talking about productivity, you're talking about more revenues. And one of the things I was talking about, you're either helping them increase revenues and growth, or you're helping them save money, or, and it's very well measured, or you're actually reducing risk. It's one of those three. And that was one of those pivot in the messaging that really allowed that company to grow a lot faster and get their value proposition right. And then they were able to go run ads on it and do all the other kind of things that an agency would do a lot faster. The execution became that much easier because the strategy was right.
Yeah, you have a destination that you're working towards, it sounds like, when you do the work first.
Yeah, I think you have a foundation is probably the best way to think about it.
Yeah, it makes sense. So it sounds like part of that foundation really is knowing your ideal customer profile very, very well. And that's the third question in your four questions about GTM. How do you actually define that ideal customer profile or that initial customer profile with the people that you work with?
Yeah, for, I think like for the listener right now, It's like, what is the title of the person? What is the company size? And what is the industry? What is their compensation plan? And how do we actually deliver, like, how do we impact that compensation plan? So if you're a listener, literally, you know, take out a blank piece of paper. You don't need to hire anyone. You don't need to talk to anyone. Just literally just do that. That's kind of stage one. A lot of people don't even have that, right? Let's just write those things down. The second stage, one of our most popular YouTube videos is three things you didn't know about your ideal customer profile. And you can literally give a search for ideal customer profile, Unstoppable TK, and you'll see it on YouTube. And that goes into like some of the more technographic and trigger-based things that you can build out your ideal customer profile around. It's like, what type of technology does your ideal customer tend to use? What is the right time? Like, what event happened for that customer that makes it that your platform is that much more valuable to them? So that's kind of the second layer. When you work with me, we actually have about a 25-point ICP creation process. So it's a lot more detailed, that goes into a lot more depth, and that helps us actually do research and based on that craft the messaging, which then makes it easy to run ads and run campaigns and all those kind of things. So it goes in shades. A lot of people don't even have the first shade, which is just like write down like some of the basics that I just mentioned. A lot of people don't even have the technographics. And so that's the second stage. And you can get into a much more detailed one when the time is right.
And then as you're building out those customer profiles, are you also thinking about things like positioning, value proposition, strategic narrative for the solution itself in that stage?
That comes after. So okay. I think the ICP is first. It's like, who are you literally serving? Is this like valuable to them? Is it urgent and important to them? And then after, like, there's three big things that we work on with founders in the program. First is ICP. Second is strategic narrative. And the third is the execution pieces, which the founders can do themselves or they can partner with an agency to do.
Let's go on to that fourth question about GTM on your YouTube channel that we pulled out. And the fourth question here is, how will you implement everything you know about the market, the big macro trend, and your ICP to distill it down into running a successful go-to-market machine? And so I think that's leading towards that execution piece that you just mentioned. What is the most important part of that execution piece once you have those strategic elements in place?
The first one I think is focus on, you know, there's six different channels that you can really generate demand under, right? You've got referrals, which is the easiest, go through your existing customers. Second is social, go through LinkedIn or Twitter, especially if you're B2B SaaS. Third is you can do outbound, email, cold calling. Fourth is you can get into marketplaces. Fifth is you can run ads. Sixth is you can do SEO. And so the first three, you can kind of do on your own and you can hire a junior marketer to do. The next three, you can lose a lot of money if you don't have a trusted partner, a trusted agency that literally manages hundreds of millions of dollars of ad budget or a real crafted SEO expert. And so I think you think about those six ways and you start to prioritize them on what you can do in-house and who you hire and then who you partner with externally to get the scale that you want once you have the strategy right.
And what are some of the most important pieces of advice you can give our listeners about choosing partners? You just mentioned it's a pretty big deal. They're going to be spending money on your behalf and helping you to go to market. Can you give us some advice on how to pick a partner?
Yeah, totally. I think let's look at strategy separate from execution because that's how I think about it. When you're thinking about strategy, like the core strategy of your SaaS business, your go-to-market strategy, your fundraising strategy, like pick a partner, whether it's an advisor, a board member, a coach like me, someone that's done it, right? Like there are a lot of people that are out there that's never done it before. And their first job is to help you build a massively scalable business. And it's like, well, that should be their second job, not their first job. So believability is important. So understand believability around strategy and pick someone that's done that before and can help you reduce the execution risk. That's, I think, the first thing. Like literally, do they have experience in building out a strategy and have they been in your seat before? That's the first thing. That's the strategy piece. On the execution piece, you want to look at scale. You want to go with partners that have dealt with a massive amount of scale and a massive number of clients. They've actually have like, you know, go with someone that manages millions of dollars of Facebook ads or LinkedIn ads or Google ads, because they can see the data on what's working and what's not. And you get the value of that data instead of you trying to learn on your own. And so I think like for the strategy piece, put someone in that's been in your shoes, literally, for the execution piece, pick people that have scale, that get a broader view of the market and knows what's working and what's not, so that when they're executing, they know how to actually optimize the execution.
So you were talking about being mostly involved in the B2B space. Do you have any thoughts on differences between go-to-market strategies for B2B versus consumer solutions? Is it a lot different?
I try to stay away from B2C because I've never done it before. And that's kind of my principle. I think there are core principles that do translate over. All I know is that B2C is a lot harder. Like, B2C is kind of a hits-based business. Either you're freaking huge or you're nothing. B2B, little by little, you can get better and better and better and better and better. And it's, in a lot of ways, there's some logic involved. It's like, it's tied to your compensation plan. We can 10X this. Here's how you get the ROI. Boom. Whereas B2C, there's a lot of emotions involved. And I think that's, so that's why I stick to what I know. I know there's some principles that translate over. You know, ultimately, as marketers, we're all trying to convince the same 10,000-year-old brain, or however old it is, right? It's the same brain we're trying to convert. But the reasons around why people say yes are different between B2B and B2C. And so I think I try to stick to my lane.
Are there differences for GTM for SaaS at different stages of funding? Like, are there differences for companies that are pre-seed versus in seed round, first round, you know, thereafter? Or are we always keeping the same approach to go to market, no matter how much money we've got, no matter what round of funding we're in?
Yeah, I think the vectors are around, do you have product market fit or not? Like, that's the first vector I look at it as. Like, if we know there's clear product market fit, then you obviously want to step on the gas a lot faster. If you don't know yet, then there's a question of, okay, well, what is our thesis on why we need to have a fit, and how do we vet that out? So I think that's the first vector that determines how far and how hard you push on the gas. So that's number one. I think the second thing is, regardless of stage, it's a question of what type of business are you looking to build, and is it a land grab? If it's a land grab, then you probably want to invest as much as possible to grow as fast as possible and raise venture capital. If it's not a land grab, then maybe you want to hold on to the equity and grow at a much better pace and a much more quality pace, and then do a growth round much later. So I think of it more as those two vectors on what is the market dynamics and the competitive dynamics, and what's the product market fit belief. Those help determine how much you push on the gas, more than how much money you have in the bank.
Yeah. How do you actually figure that out?
My favorite is the thing that's been popularized by, I believe, Sean Ellis and Rahul Vora of Superhuman. You ask your customers, it's like, what happened? Like, how sad would you be if you could no longer use product X? Would you be very disappointed, somewhat disappointed, disappointed, not disappointed? Or versus, like, I'd be really happy if you just left me alone, right? And if greater than 40% replies somewhat disappointed, then you have product market fit. I think that's like the metric that they use. And I think that's really good. Like, that's the closest anyone has gotten. It's brilliant. That's the closest that anyone's gotten to scientifically determining product market fit. And I think that's a pretty good metric, like, just surveying users and say, how disappointed would you be? You can look this up, like, you can just Google it on product market fit, Rahul Vora, Superhuman, like, you'll get it really quick. It's on the first round blog.
Okay, and we'll be sure to link all these things that you're mentioning in the show notes for everybody out there listening, so that you can quickly go through and link to TK and his YouTube channel and blog and these other resources that we're mentioning here. Definitely want this podcast to be a go-to resource for you as you're thinking about all of these different things. So one of the things, as you were talking there, TK, that I was thinking about is, so it really sounds like no matter what stage you're in, you're almost having to do all of these things at once and push them forward in little increments all at once. So thinking about the product itself, thinking about the go-to-market strategy and the ideal customer, and testing out whether there might be a fit. The reason I'm thinking that is, you're saying ask your users. So that means you have to have some users to ask. You have to have some people that are using the solution from the very beginning. Would you say that that's a fair summary of what you're saying here, is that we're kind of pushing all fronts forward at the same time? Or are there certain things we need to be doing first, second, third, always with go-to-market?
Well, I think, you know, the question is really around company building, right? Like, as a founder, what do you focus on? And I think as a founder, you literally have two levers. One is you're either shipping code, and the second is you're closing deals, especially in the early stages. Ship code, close deals. That's it. You're either shipping code that's going to help you close more deals, or you're closing deals that helps you get more resources and helps you ship more code. And maybe if you're losing a deal, then it'll tell you what code to ship so that you don't lose any more deals because of that reason. So ship code, close deals is the general mantra that I like to follow and I teach my founders to do that I work with. And that allows you to understand, like, which one do you need to push on more at any given moment? Maybe it's both. Maybe it's one. Maybe, you know, you went out in the market, a bunch of people told you, like, look, literally not interested. They need to go back to, like, shipping code on, like, how do we get into solving a problem that people are interested in? Or maybe you got into a point where, like, the product's pretty good. And, yeah, there's always one more feature, but really you need to start closing some deals to really know if the product's really as good as you think it is or your initial customers say it is. Then you got to, like, pull back on shipping code and push more on closing deals. And I think those are the two levers that matter the most from a company building founder or CEO perspective.
Ship code, close deals. That sounds like a great t-shirt to release for Unstoppable.
We do have a t-shirt store for Unstoppable, and we do have that t-shirt.
Well, good. I didn't even know that, actually. It sounds like a plant that I said that, but I literally did not know that. So that's great. Great minds think alike.
Yeah.
I think I'll be going over there and doing some shopping after this.
You should totally, yeah. You can link to it in the show notes.
Yes, of course.
We don't make any money on the t-shirts. People just love them. So we started to sell them at cost.
One of the things that's really interesting for me is the experiences that you've had, you know, as a founder, as someone who has built and sold something very significant, and you've been in this game for a few years now. Do you think that this sort of go-to-market strategy or the game in general of SaaS, has it changed in, like, let's say the last 5 years, has it changed a lot what we need to be paying attention to nowadays?
It's certainly evolved. I think there are two or three things that are wildly different today than ever before. One, I think the scale of enterprise software and B2B SaaS is bigger than ever before. There are more niche industries, verticals that are still running on old software or spreadsheets that SaaS can now solve for. So it's bigger than ever before. Companies that we thought would cap out at 100 million are billion-dollar companies. So the market's way bigger than we realize. So that's one thing that's evolved and changed for the better. The second thing that's changed is the different ways you can go to market has certainly changed and evolved. And the bar is higher, but I believe the bar is higher for a quality go-to-market experience, machine, messaging. Like, you got to be crisp, you got to be tight, you got to really speak to your customer, otherwise they'll ignore you. I think it's a lot higher because now the competition is so much higher. So I think that's number two. The third thing that's changed, I think, is the barrier to entry is very low. Like, you can go and start a SaaS business fairly quickly on Amazon AWS, put up a Webflow homepage, and boom, you're in business. So the barrier to entry is lower than ever, but the barrier to win is higher than ever. And the opportunity is bigger than ever, which makes for a really great industry when I think about it.
You don't find that intimidating in the least?
I've been doing this for 15 years, so I have an unfair advantage. And every founder that I work with gets an unfair advantage. So for us, it's like, hell yeah, bring it on. Let's go.
I love it. Well, TK, I really appreciate you coming on the show. We're going to link all of your stuff in the show notes so people can come and find you and work with you if they are a SaaS founder looking for help with these things. Do you have any last piece of golden advice for our B2B SaaS founders out there who are looking for some inspiration?
Yeah, ship code, close deals.
You've been listening to the Marketing Hero podcast by ClearPivot. Be sure to join us next time. For more information, visit www.clearpivot.com.